I vote aye also. Item four is an amended waste discharge requirement for the United States Borax Incorporated Rio Tinto Minerals Clean Energy Fuels Company, their facility at Boron in Kern County. And I believe this is indicated on the agenda as a consent item. And I believe that means that there will not be a staff presentation. Are there any comments or anything other than a comment from any board member?
Can I move approval?
Yes, sir.
I move approval.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Thank you. Is there any discussion? Call for a vote. Dr. Horn?
Aye.
Mr. Diaz?
Aye.
Mr. Jardine?
Aye.
Mr. Sandell?
Aye.
I vote aye also. Item five, the chair, which is... How can this happen? I mean, there's an index, there are little tabs. Those of you who are young, don't be frightened by this, but it's what happens. The California Regional Water Control Board, Lahontan Region, is holding a public hearing today to consider rescinding the Silver King NPDES permit. Waste discharge requirements order number R6T20100015. The hearing will begin with a presentation from staff. Next, we will hear comments from the public. All persons who wish to participate and who have not yet submitted an orange speaker card are requested to do so now. This hearing will not be conducted according to the technical rules of evidence. The board will accept any testimony that is reasonably relevant to the matter under consideration. The chair may impose reasonable time limits and may require groups to choose a single spokesperson. We ask each person commenting to come to the lectern to speak. Please begin by stating your name, address, and whom you represent. So I'd like to start by calling for the staff presentation, Mr. Lenton.
Is this working? Okay. And I have control of the presentation. Oops. Good evening, Chair Pumphrey and the other members of the board. My name is Ben Letton. I'm a supervising engineering geologist, a division manager in the South Lake Tahoe office. I'm going to be presenting to you today a presentation that was prepared by Bruce Warden of our staff in the South Lake Tahoe office. However, he was unable to join us this evening. He's in contract training right now, lucky him. And so I volunteered to present this on his behalf. And it might be the shortest presentation I've ever given. Maybe it's the shortest one that the board has ever heard, but it is on the rescission of Silver King Creek, rescission of the Silver King Creek Paiute Cutthroat Trout Restoration Project NPDES permit. So some of you may be familiar with this project. It began quite a long time ago. I know that Board Member Jardine is familiar with it as a resident of Alpine County. It is essentially an NPDES permit that was issued to the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. At that time, I believe it was still Fish and Game, to apply the pesticide rotenone to eradicate non-native trout in Silver Creek, King Creek, prior to restoration of the Paiute cutthroat trout in their historic habitat. The first issuance of the NPDES permit was by the State Board in 2005, and this was a somewhat controversial project and has quite a history. Essentially, there was an injunction by the U.S. District Court in 2005, shortly after the issuance of the permit, citing concerns and impacts to macroinvertebrates and inadequacy of an adequate environmental document. In 2010, an EIS and EIR was issued for the project, and then the Water Board adopted the MPDS permit in 2010, and that is an enclosure two of your agenda. In 2011, there was another injunction, this time by the federal, in violations of the Federal Wilderness Act, and then in the U.S. California Eastern District Court dissolved that in 2011. The first treatments of the rotenone began in 2013. So there were three seasons of treatments that were completed starting in 2013 and also in 2014 and again in 2015. The primary reasons for a rescission of the permit at this time is because the treatments have been effective. The project area is free of non-native trout. California Department of Fish and Wildlife has demonstrated that the beneficial uses have been restored. That was a condition of the permit. No more treatments are planned at this time, and both the project opponents and those in support of the rescission of the permit. We did receive one comment letter from Ms. Ann McCampbell, and she is supportive of rescinding the permit. Some lessons learned along the way are that the benthic macroinvertebrate studies show that the rotenone impact was less or had less an impact on the macroinvertebrates than seasonal variability at the time, mostly due to the drought that was occurring at that time. Also that some of the downstream fish barriers were somewhat inadequate in terms of stopping the passage of some of the non-native trout. And also that at this time, the Paiute cutthroat trout populations are not in good enough shape to be able to provide the stock to replant the stretch of Silver Creek, King Creek, so that it has been somewhat delayed. So the recommendation here is to rescind the permit, and I will take any questions that you might have.
Thank you. If it didn't break the record, it's certainly in the running. Any questions? I'll start with questions, and then when we get through those, we'll go to comments, if that's okay with the board members. Any questions, Dr. Horn?
No questions.
Mr. Dias?
No questions.
Mr. Jardine?
No questions.
Mr. Sandell?
No questions.
I have no questions. Comments? Ms. or Dr. Horn?
I thought it was, in reading the report from the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and talking about the reasons why the drought had more of an impact than the rotenone, they mentioned that it was because anchor ice formed. So I'm just pointing that out as a way of emphasizing the importance of maintaining the stream flows as we have increasing temperatures and increasing drought due to climate change.
Mr. Dias?
My only comment is that I do agree with the staff.
Mr. Jardine?
I do agree with the staff recommendation. If you ever get a chance to go up to Llewellyn Falls, I do history tours up there since the 70s, and I take tribal elders up there because there's a lot of neat history. I mean, it goes Llewellyn comes from the old Welsh term. So it's a really neat, beautiful country.
Mr. Sandale.
No comment.
I would add only that in addition to the lessons learned that you mentioned, I think this is an interesting thing to look at from the perspective of being here today. It was very controversial. It turns out that the worst things didn't happen. The best things didn't happen. The plan didn't exactly go as anticipated in any of its iterations. And a twist that nobody counted on or could account for has sort of mooted the ultimate goal of the project until the fish stock can recover. And I only point this out not to be critical, but to just say this is how life works. And so it's the kind of thing that we need to bear in mind as we make decisions about plans that we're going to do and things that we're going to make happen, is to, you know, also bear in mind that it might not work the way that it was penciled out. And that we need to practice being nimble and being willing to accept twists of fate that are not what was in the original document.
Chair, could I respond to your comment?
Yes.
And one of the things that happened along the way was, so the project that we eventually permitted was very different than the project that was originally brought to us. The project that originally brought to us was much bigger would have put Roten on in much more of the water and in the springs up in the headwaters. And one of the reasons we denied the permit the first time they brought it to us was we asked them to refine the scope of the project to target
Again, my comment's really not directed at being critical of this, anything that happened with respect to this permit. It's just a sort of an observation, peripheral observation on some of the hubris that we engage in from time to time on making all decisions. And I'm just, a lot of things have happened in the last week or two in California that suggest to me that we need to take a step back as we do what we're doing and remember that regardless of the amount of information we have or the intentions that we have, that there are just so many intervening factors that we need to bear in mind that things have a way of turning out differently, perhaps, than we thought. So I hope that wasn't misunderstood. Is there a motion?
Excuse me, Board Chair, before we have a motion.
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
Sorry to interrupt.
I'm
I just want to put a statement in the record that we received no orange speaker cards for this item or members of the public wishing to speak. Thank you.
Thank you. So there being no indication of public comment, I'm going to go ahead and close the hearing and then ask for comments or a motion from the board.
I move that we rescind the Silver King Creek
Second that.
Been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Proceed to a vote. Dr. Horn?
Aye.
Mr. Diaz?
Aye.
Mr. Jardine?
Aye.
Mr. Sandell?
Aye.
Aye also. Thank you, sir. Item six is a consideration of update regarding harmful algal blooms in the Lahontan region. Okay, great.
Good evening, Board Chair, members of the board. I'm Mary Fiore-Wagner, Senior Environmental Scientist in your South Lake Tahoe office. And tonight I will be presenting item number 6 in your agenda packet. And this will be an update on harmful algal blooms in our region. I'll concentrate on the ones that we investigated during the 2018 growing season. And first I'm going to play a quick, it's a short video clip. This was shot during one of our field investigations that we conducted in September of this year. And one thing that struck me was this is a lake in our region in a relatively undisturbed watershed. And it was as impacted as some of the lakes that are in very urbanized and agricultural perturbations going on in the watershed. And anyway, so here's a clip, and you can kind of see the viscosity of the scum of algae on the lake surface. So it was disturbing to me that this was happening in our region. Okay. Where am I pointing? Where am I pointing this? Wherever. Okay. So presentation outline. I'll start the presentation with a brief introduction of cyanobacteria so we all have a basic understanding of a new biological pollutant that is impacting our region. Then I'll graphically show where HABs have occurred throughout our region and highlight some of the lakes we've investigated. Next, I'll showcase a lake where we learned of a suspected bloom, and I'll walk you through the elements of our response to that HAB incident. Then I'm going to highlight an approach that we utilized this summer to improve on our HAB response. And then I will discuss some of the successes and challenges that we experienced during the 2018 season. And then lastly, I will present our plans to prepare for and improve on the effectiveness of our HAB response during the 2019 growing season. Okay. Whoops. Uh-oh. Amber, can you get me back to... Thank you. Okay, so cyanobacteria, they are ubiquitous in the environment, and they're not a new phenomenon. They have a long evolutionary history, earliest and their most primitive form of life on Earth. They actually have given us the oxygen we breathe today. In the geological record, they are 3.5 billion years old, and they're the foundation of the aquatic food web. They've also given rise to higher living organisms. Ecologically, they are found in all environments where there's enough light to grow. They're found in hot springs, ice fields. They're very common in freshwater, though they can be found in marine environments. Some of you may be familiar with the diammonic acid. That's the paralytic shellfish poisoning, which closed some of the shellfish off the coast. And they also recently have been seen and detected in streams and rivers. And we see that in the Klamath and the Eel Rivers and suspected in the Sacramento River last year. And here's the big mystery solved. They are referred to as blue-green algae because functionally they are similar to algae in that they photosynthesize and they contain chlorophyll A. However, biologically, they are a true bacteria. They're a prokaryotic cell. Back to sixth grade biology, if you recall, prokaryotic cells, they are very simple. They don't have flagella. They don't have any organelles, no mitochondria, endoplasmic reticulum. So, but again, that's why they are referred to as blue-green algae, but truly they are bacteria. They exist as single cells, filaments, and colonies that sometimes are in a gelatinous sheath. And drivers of cyanobacteria, warm temperatures, stagnant quiescent waters, and nutrient-rich environments. in the field, visually, you can sometimes detect a release of toxin from the cyanobacteria cell if you see a spilled paint look that appears on the surface. Often it will be a bright blue color, cyano, Greek for blue, and that's why sometimes it will appear as a blue sheen on the surface of a water. So that's a good visual indicator. Then we would collect a sample back in-house in our laboratory. We can look at it under the microscope to look at specific cell densities. But it is only through laboratory analysis, which we have to send out and have run at the specialized laboratory, that we could get detection of cyanotoxins. So that has to be done outside. Economically, actually, cyanobacteria and the toxins have been used to produce sunscreen, anti-cancer, and antimicrobial pharmaceuticals. However, they are very harmful to humans. Most are dermatoxins. They also can cause rapid onset to dogs and livestock and death within, depending on what the toxin is that is in the water. Okay, this slide presents HAB incidents that impacted the Lahontan region in 2018. And on the next slide, I will compare how 2017 compared to 2018. As you can see from this graphic, HABs, they are not discriminating. They are occurring all throughout our region. They've affected the entire region, north to south, impacting surface waters and reservoirs located as far south as San Bernardino County and as far north as Lassen County, from high desert to alpine environments. Water bodies that have been impacted include man-made lakes surrounded by homeowners' communities, Tahoe Keys, and then also Spring Valley Homeowners Association, one located in our northern region, the other in our southern region. Drinking water source supplies, Silverwood Lake, Crowley Lake, have been impacted. County-operated recreational lakes, Lake Gregory, Diaz Lake, and Horseshoe Lake. High alpine lakes in relatively undisturbed watersheds, Red Lake and Rimrock Lake, which is in Lassen County. This slide also shows on the left-hand side the health advisory levels that correspond to trigger levels designed to protect human and animal health. I'll go into those in a little more detail later. You can probably do the math and see we had 13 HAB incidents. Of those 13, there were 12 advisories, 11 were caution level, one was danger level. The 13th incident did not, there were no toxins measured, and this is Department of Water Resources. They do weekly monitoring April through November of Silverwood Lake and other water bodies throughout the State Drinking Water Project system, and they are getting no detections of cyanotoxins. However, in 2016 and 2017, Silverwood Lake was closed. The swim beach was shut for weeks because of high dangerous levels of cyanotoxins. These non-detects are attributed to Department of Water Resources applying algicides to Silverwood Lake, and they're staying ahead of it, and that's why we're not seeing it. Okay, compared to 2017, 2018, it demonstrates that, as expected, we are seeing an increased occurrence of HABs in our region. Science and research suggests that HABs are likely to continue to increase in abundance, duration, geographic range, and frequency. And this is the pattern that we are experiencing, and also statewide. From 2017 to 2018, statewide, HAB incidents doubled. Abundance, you can see we had 10 incidents in 2017, 13 in 2018. The elevation, we saw a broader range of elevation where they were recurring. Duration, in 2016, our first HAB incident was reported to us in September. 2017, it was July. In 2018, we saw it as early as May, and that was in the Tahoe Keys. So we are expecting this partly because of environmental conditions that are being brought about by climate change. That's seeming to drive an increase the increases in these occurrences. And partly you have temperatures that are warming. Microcystin especially thrives in warm water above 77 degrees Fahrenheit. Rainfall patterns are changing. We're seeing extended periods of drought, so you have that quiescent water, stagnant, no flow coming in. However, episodic events are going to be delivering a large nutrient pulse to the water body. And then those cyanobacteria are going to just, you know, eat that up. Changes in salinity may be also increasing the toxin levels because some of the cyanobacteria are stressed under a more higher salinity, so they would the cell would lyse and they would release the toxin into the water. Okay, now I'm going to take you, I'm going to acquaint you with some of the haves that we have experienced throughout our region during the 2018 growing season. These are all photographs that we have taken and we've responded to these incidents. And I want you to pay attention to how different haves can look from water body to water body. So going from north to south, we have Eagle Lake located in Lassen County, elevation 5,100 feet. July 25th, actually, this sampling was done by the U.S. Forest Service staff from the Lassen County, Lassen National Forest, the Eagle Lake Ranger District. They attended a workshop that we held, so they were very familiar with the proper protocols. There is a nutrient source possibility here. We have some cattle grazing along the shoreline, which might be contributing some nutrients. It is a terminal lake. It's a closed system. There's no outfall. So the Forest Service, on our behalf, they sampled. Those samples were sent out for analysis, and they did come back with low levels of microcystin is the toxin. And as a result, they posted mostly in the southern portion of Eagle Lake, where there's the recreational use is the heaviest. There's some day camps, overnight camps. There's Gallatin Marina and Swimming Beach. The Forest Service took the lead in visually monitoring the bloom throughout the rest of the summer. And they're looking at any trends, any changes in that bloom. Is it getting worse? Is it dissipating? Traveling south, Topaz Lake. This is located in both Mono and Douglas counties at an elevation of 5,000 feet. About 60%, Keith, is in Nevada, and about 40% of the lake is in California. That it was a coordinated effort. Staff actually did the sampling here. As you can see, the discoloration of the water, that is typical. It's a pea, typically a pea green color. Staff sampled, and our results came back and also warranted a caution level advisory. Now, what was interesting here is there was in June, the end of June 2018, Topaz Lake was sampled. There were detectable levels of cyanobacteria. However, there was no toxin measured in the water column at that time. So this is these things can morph over time. There are things that trigger, and there's a lot of research, what are those triggers? That the cyanobacteria can be present at one time, and then something will turn them on, and the toxins are released. June, there were no toxins. Now in August, there were toxins. We coordinated with NDEP and also CDFW because they do stock the lake, and Mono County Environmental Health Department. That's we were recommending caution level advisories. Farther south, Crowley Lake, located in Mono County, July 12th. This was a new bloom report that came to us. It was a report filed on the statewide centralized database. There's a reporting system, and then it gets farmed out to the respective regional board. So it came to us, and we were able to coordinate with Luis Molina at Mono County. He sampled on our behalf. Once we received those results, we recommended a caution level advisory based on levels that were detected of toxin that were detected in the water. And during the site visit, there were, you know, people camping along the shoreline. There was a lot of dog activity. People were in the water, though I think it's more common to fish there. There still is some water contact recreation, even though supposedly it's posted not to swim there. Okay, now, one thing that changed from the time the presentation was prepared in October, as part of a satellite imagery field verification project that we are participating in, state board staff visited Crowley Lake. This was October. During their visit, they collected samples. The samples collected then and analyzed came back with danger levels of toxins. So within 2 months' time, we changed from a caution level of toxin then to danger. So these things morph. And then Spring Valley Lake here, note how different that bloom looks. I mean, it doesn't look that bad, and you can see people recreating in the water and along the shoreline. This is a close-up picture. This was Victorville staff that responded. This was sampled as part of a pre-holiday assessment. The state board is doing this twice a year before big holidays, the 4th of July holiday and Labor Day. This is done at select water bodies with some interaction from regional board staff on where they would prefer to see sampling based on high recreational use. And we did have a hit here at Spring Valley Lake, which is located in San Bernardino County. So visually, this looks very different. I'm hoping you noticed that from the other blooms that I showed earlier. Now, one thing that was very unique here, this was antitoxin A, is one of the toxins that is very harmful to domestic pets. And part of that, any detection of antitoxin A, they recommend that you post a caution because unlike humans, dogs are very curious. They will lap up smelly, stinky algae. They will ingest it. They can ingest. They're exposed more than a human would be. They're going to hydrate in the water. They're drinking it. They're eating it. And then they get out and they groom their coat, which has additional toxins on it. So Spring Valley Lake Homeowners Association was very quick to respond to that. And then in this next slide, you can actually see examples of health advisory postings that were posted in our region through coordination with either the water body operator or water body owner. These public health signs, they are ready made and they're available on the state board's HAB portal. So a water body operator and owner can basically tailor these. They're available in both Spanish and English. They can tailor them caution, warning, and danger level based on what's going on at their specific lake. All levels, caution, warning, and danger, advise not to drink the water or ingest the fish. The caution level advisory can be recommended on visual indicators of a bloom. You don't have to have a detection of a toxin to put up that caution. But the warning and danger levels, those are associated with the toxin actually being measured in the water column. This middle picture is signs that were posted throughout the Tahoe Keys subdivision in Tahoe at both of the major entrances, and then they also had smaller signs at the lagoons that were impacted. We also have a newsletter that Alpine Watershed Group put out to its membership to warn of a bloom that was occurring at Red Lake, which I will talk about shortly. And then on the right-hand side is some of the postings that went to Spring Valley Lake community and one Jay Cass received as a resident of that subdivision. That was an email blast that went out to their community to warn them. They also posted signs about domestic pets because that was the one that had that antitoxin A, which is very harmful to dogs. Okay, moving on, I'm going to take you through the elements of responding to a HAB event. This is a busy slide, but it's kind of cradle to grave and how we move through our response. So for our example, we will use a suspected bloom that was reported to us on September 5th, 2018 at Red Lake. This is a high elevation lake located at over 7,800 feet in Alpine County. It's located near Kirkwood Ski Resort. It's located in a relatively undisturbed watershed. The headwaters originate in the Carson Iceberg Wilderness, and it's within the Humboldt-Tioga National Forest. It's a man-made reservoir. It's operated and owned by CDF, California Department of Fish and Wildlife. There is a release into Red Lake Creek, and that release is operated by at the base of Red Lake Dam. I think I have this right. Don's shaking his head. There's also cattle allotment that the Humboldt-Tioga administers, which uses portions of Hope Valley. So that's kind of important. On the upper left hand, that is actually a photograph that a hiker took on his visit to the Carson Iceberg Wilderness area. And he then alerted us. He filed this with the state board's reporting system and alerted us. We then responded on September 6th. Then around the perimeter of the picture of the lake are the various steps of our response. Jar test, the microscope ID, the lab analysis, and then posting advisories, which we'll walk through in a little more detail. So that bloom report that was filed then triggered a site visit in which we did some basic site recon. We took photographs and we documented visual observations and any site indicators of cyanobacteria, which were evident. And as you can see, the general appearance of the water, that pea green color, it was viscous, thick, soupy surface scum. This Red Lake was the video we started out with today. There was algal scum floating on the top, and it was accumulating on the shoreline, and part of that was, you know, wind-driven. It was crusted on the rocks, and which would be especially tempting for dogs to lick. And that would be something you would consider when you're trying to assess what is the exposure potential. Now, you see the gloved hand with a stick. This is a qualitative test that it can actually be done in the field, and we will work with citizen monitors on this. You take a stick, and you get a sample of the algae in your gloved hand, two fingers. You kind of swish it around on your gloved hand. If that algae sticks together and is filamentous, it probably isn't cyanobacteria. It's probably Spirogyra and something that you might put in your kid's lunchbox. If it smears and leaves almost a stain on your glove, then it probably is cyanobacteria. Again, qualitative test, but it is a good screen, which then can prompt you to do some higher level testing. So this is what we saw when we responded. These are pictures taken from that day. We come back to the office, and this is another qualitative test, the jar test. You take a mason jar. So, you know, the citizens, this is a great test they can do. Cyanobacteria, many of them have a gas vesicle, which allows them to be buoyant in the water column. This also allows them to outcompete other organisms in the water column. They can go to where light is. They can go to where the nutrients are. So you take your sample, you put it in the refrigerator for 24 hours. If you have that film on the, it rises to the top, it's likely cyanobacteria. If it plummets to the bottom of the water sample, then it's probably not cyanobacteria. Again, another good screening. In the office, we plate the slide and we look at it under the microscope. This is actually a picture of what I saw under the microscope. And I am not a taxonomist, thank you. But I'm getting good at identifying these to the genera. This is Dolichos spermum, and Microcystin is the cluster you see. And on the right-hand side are actually what the laboratory provided us on microscopy ID. So they're further verifying that those organisms were in that sample. These two are commonly found throughout our region, and they can produce toxins. So on the next slide, we get the laboratory report back. They do microscopy ID, so they're actually looking for the density of cells under the microscope. Then they are doing polymerase chain reaction tests to look at the genes. Do the cells contain the genes that produce the toxins? And they certainly did. And then once you get that check, then you take it to the next laboratory analysis for the toxin itself. And you can see here that there were detectable levels of microcystin, and they fit within the danger. They exceeded it quite a bit. This 293 microgram per liter, that was an actual scum sample that was collected. So it was very concentrated. The other two, which 31 and 24, that was a water column surface grab sample. But still, you can see for microcystin, what has been recommended for health advisory levels, these are designed for recreational water bodies to protect human health and animals who might come in contact with the water body that's impacted. They have recommended 20 micrograms per liter. So we have exceeded this at Red Lake, which then prompted reaching out to the water body operator and owner. In this case was CDFW. We also coordinated with Alpine County Environmental Health and with Alpine Watershed Group, because they are very active in that area. And CDFW was very quick to respond. They were out there, I think, the next week. Within days, they posted signs. These are actually from their sign on their website. They posted a warning about what was going on there. And then here's the Alpine Watershed Group's newsletter to its membership about what was going on at Red Lakes. Okay, so now I'm going to switch gears a little bit and talk about a strategy that we thought would be definitely beneficial for our region as we move forward with HAB response, because we cannot, as you know, in our region so vast, be 600 miles quickly if there is an outbreak in Moda County or in San Bernardino County. We can't get there quick enough. So we decided to host two regional HAB workshops. We concentrated on the southern portion of our region because that's in 2017 where we were seeing the glut of the cyanobacteria blooms. So we had one in Bishop and Victorville. The goal was to foster partnerships and improve the technical capacity of local agencies to respond to HAB events when water board staff was not readily available. The objectives of the workshop included providing participants with an adequate level of information to respond to the reports of a HAB, from proper collection and handling of water samples to lab result interpretation, and then understanding the importance and the process of posting the water body. These workshops were for an intended audience, so it was a targeted group we were reaching out to. We wanted to engage with the water body operators and owners and the environmental health departments. The participants heard up-to-date and relevant information about cyanobacteria and HABs, including causes, health impacts, and management strategies. This slide shows the participants that attended. In the middle, those were the shared groups between the Bishop and Victorville workshops. They were successful. I think a broad spectrum of people came in agencies. County Environmental Health, of the five in our southern region, all participated. San Bernardino, Kern, Inyo, Mono, and LA. They were all there. Utility districts, South Tahoe PUD came to both Bishop and Victorville. LADWP came to both Bishop and Victorville. Consultants came, water board staff attended both. what was unique to Bishop, we had Forest Service staff and tribal representatives from the Bishop Paiute tribe. Unique to the Victorville workshop, we had Nevada Division of Environmental Protection, California Department of Water Resources, California Department of Parks and Rec, and homeowners associations. So we reached some good groups. This is just the agenda. It was a day packed. We had a cadre of technical area experts. Presenters included staff from the Office of Environmental Health Hazard and Assessment, California Department of Fish and Wildlife, UC Berkeley experts, and state and regional water board staff. Participants got an understanding of cyanohabs, human, domestic, animal, and wildlife health risks were discussed. Mitigation and management measures were touched on. I shared kind of a 30,000-foot overview of physical, chemical, and biological management measures that are available. We also, in our region, as you know, it regulatory considerations for algicide use. We discussed the permitting requirements and the basin plan prohibition. There was also a field portion, so people were comfortable with proper protocols as far as the site visit, sampling, how to pack the cooler, how to ship it, and then interpreting lab results when you get those back, and then posting of the signs. Okay, now accomplishments of our HAB workload for 2018. This, I'm not going to go through them all, but we built partnerships. That's what we did, and I think we were successful. And also 16 water board staff. Now we've bolstered our internal capacity of responding to HAB events. And we have 16 partner agencies that are trained on HAB site reconnaissance, sampling, microscopy ID, and advisory postings. A gentleman from Inyo County Environmental Health actually asked me if he could get continuing education credits for the class. So I kind of took that as a compliment. So we actually, with that recommendation, have reached out to State Board, and they are going to work with the Training Academy to see if that's a possibility. And one thing, we were successful because five of the entities that actually attended these workshops responded on our behalf this summer when we couldn't get there. Notably, Inyo County, Mono County, Forest Service, DWR, Bishop Paiute Tribe, and TKPOA on its own has been doing a great job in monitoring its own situation. Some of the challenges, it is time and staff intensive. This has been a new perturbation within our region. So it's been a very reactive learning curve, not just at our region, but statewide. It's a fairly new program that's being developed to address HABs. Follow through of water body operators and owners to post health advisories. We can only recommend. The water board cannot require. County environmental health departments, public health, CDPH, they may have more teeth, but again, it's not required. And in some of our more rural counties that depend largely on tourism and recreation, they're not always willing to post. So that has been a hurdle. Data management, filing an initial bloom report on the State Board centralized system. Then once you get lab reports and deal with the water body operator on what the posting, that should be updated. And that so it can reach and notify a wide audience. Doing those updates is time consuming. So that has been a challenge. Community outreach and notification sometimes is a challenge, and then funding to support follow-up sampling. State Board has limited funding. The only funding they have is for a new bloom response. So once we know that it's there, there isn't any money for follow-up monitoring. So with that, a lot of times what's recommended is the visual monitoring to just look at that, the trend of the bloom. Like I mentioned earlier, Tahoe Keys Property Owners Association, they have taken on a pretty robust monitoring program for CyanoHabs, visual monitoring and water quality testing. Over the summer, every 2 to 3 weeks, they're sampling. In October, they sampled twice and finally had two consecutive non-detectable toxins, at which point we could recommend they take the caution signs down. However, they are keeping them handy. Okay, 2019 HAB response plan for our region, and this is consistent with the state board's approach. It was very successful to have these workshops, so we hope to host another one next year, focusing probably in the Lahontan region and maybe north. And that will help build local capacity. The problem, though, it is nice to be able to see the bloom, and unfortunately, when we would have the workshop is a little more at the tail end of when you'd be responding. So that's always tricky. And in Tahoe, it's going to be a challenge because we may have the bloom during, you know, 4th of July and Labor Day, which is the easiest time to get lodging and all that. But anyway, field assessment and ambient monitoring. This is where we can make some progress training citizen scientists for field assessment and ambient monitoring. So continuing with that monitoring of working with Alpine Watershed Group to maybe look at some tributaries and the nutrient inputs. What are the drivers? What are the triggers for the toxins? And then identifying partners that can include HAB parameters in their existing water quality monitoring programs. Many don't look at cyanobacteria or toxins. Maybe they can start incorporating those. And risk assessment for potential HAB events, there is very little work here, both regionally and at the state board. It's resource intensive. And it's a lower priority. This would include landscape risk analysis and historical analysis of blooms using GIS, remote sensing, and, you know, to learn the distribution and abundance of and environmental stressors. So hopefully there'll be some progress on that in the coming years. This slide shows the statewide freshwater HAB assessment and support strategy framework developed in 2016. The yellow highlights response to HAB events and ambient monitoring, matching up with our regional approach. That's what the state board focuses on. So it's that immediate event response. That's mostly they're providing the funding for that. They have infrastructure to support both the response to HAB events, satellite imagery tool, which I'll talk about shortly. They have this centralized system to report the bloom and then update about the bloom. They have fact sheets available for human and animal illnesses, available to vets. So, you know, they may be able to be familiar if a ill animal comes in. They could recognize and then report that. There's templates for posting and also that state board website. The infrastructure supports standard operating procedures and health and safety when collecting samples. Back to our regional response for 2019. We, like I said, we're going to plan to host those regional workshops. Should we have a lot of HABs? I hope we don't, but we do need to prioritize our response. We have a decision tree that we've worked up, and that is based on proximity to our offices. What is the level of recreational use that is supported? Is it contact rec? Is it non-contact rec? And then what is the ease of access for the public to get to these areas? Diaz Lake is right on 395. Common, you know, stop and rest area versus a lake located in Desolation Wilderness. And then we are also going to continue to support the satellite imagery tool and field verification. I mentioned earlier that Crowley Lake was visited in October. So This, I'm backing up to July when we had a cyanohab incident at Crowley Lake. So this is the satellite imagery that corresponded to that day. I do want to point out some limitations of this satellite imagery tool, which are being refined, and that's why we are participating with this field verification effort. The limitations right now, it's accurate for larger water bodies, about 250 acres in size. Cloud cover and turbidity can affect it, the accuracy. If in your agenda packet there was a table of all our water bodies that were impacted, 4 of the 13 would have been picked up by the satellite accurately, because the 4 of the 13 are over the 250 acres. However, like I said, they are making improvements. The satellite picks up different wavelengths of light. It's specifically honing in on chlorophyll A and phycocyanin. Phycocyanin is specific to cyanobacteria. So a large pulse of phycocyanin, that is showing the abundance of cyanobacteria. It does not indicate at all if toxins are being produced, but a message would go out to water body operators, regional board staff, and that might then prompt a site visit. So as you can see, this is Crowley Lake. These are the pixel images. The colors correspond to the legend on the left, and color corresponds with kind of a moderate level of cyanobacteria. That day, samples were collected. We had toxins in the water at a caution level. In October, State Board staff went out to Crowley Lake. As you can see, that cyanobacteria, the density corresponded to a higher level. And interestingly enough, the toxin levels that were measured in the water samples that day came back at a danger level. So there is some truth to this tool. And again, it's a screening tool, but it is an advantage because these larger lakes do support a high level of recreational activity. So anyway, there's a lot of promise with this tool. Field assessment and ambient monitoring, plans to train citizen scientists for field assessment and ambient monitoring. Tahoe Water Suppliers Association has reached out, as well as Tahoe Environmental Research Center. We hope to do some citizen monitoring training with them. Hopefully, Eric Burrs with State Board, he's the citizen science monitor, can assist. And then identifying partners to include HAB parameters in their existing water quality monitoring. We've already had great discussions with the Alpine Watershed Group, California Department of Fish and Wildlife. Visually, they can monitor. I don't know if they have the money to actually support the water quality testing. U.S. Forest Service staff, they have been very engaged and interested in especially looking at Eagle Lake, but also there was a bloom Rim Rock Lake, which is in Desolation Wilderness. And important with Rim Rock, it supports hunting, and you're going to have dogs. So you want that caution for the domestic pets as well. And Tahoe Keys Property Owners Association, they already are incorporating those cyanobacteria and toxins into their water quality monitoring that they do routinely. And then I will just end with this, but it's this was from this year, a calendar. And what's highlighted there is the caution of blue-green cyanobacteria and warning dog owners about this threat that is very real, because as we know, our dogs are like family. So we need to take heed. But that is my presentation. Thank you. Is that record longest presentation? Ben had shortest.
Oh, no, it certainly is not. any questions or comments for Ms. Fiore Wagner, Dr. Horn?
I had
If it looks like paint and has the blue color, it probably is, because that is the lysine. It's probably the toxin that you're seeing with the color. Yeah. And then, you know, there is the distinction that harmful algal blooms, and then you have cyanobacteria harmful algal blooms, which are toxin producing. But a algal bloom, as you know, could be also a water quality impact, in that your DO levels are decreased and it's impacting the light penetration. So, but the cyanobacteria specifically then have the added threat of the toxins that can be emitted.
Mr. Diaz?
Yes, thank you. Mary, did you say that HAB events require a certain minimum temperature of about 70 degrees Fahrenheit?
Sure.
They tend to thrive in warmer waters, but they have been detected even in ice caps and ice fields in Antarctica. So, and they have been around. Now, that's the bacteria, not necessarily the toxin.
Mr. Jardine.
I have plenty of questions, but I'll do that offline. I need to talk with my watershed group. I was liaison, and my wife and several friends do water testing, so up there in the East Fork and the West Fork of the Carson River.
Mm-hmm. But,
I'll get back to you.
We've met with Mo Loden, the new watershed coordinator, and I've been in discussions with Kimra, the executive director. Yeah, and they're very interested in getting involved. And Mo actually accompanied us to Red Lake and Wet Meadows Reservoir, which is at 8,200 feet elevation, which was experiencing a bloom.
And I do work with South Tahoe PUD. I chair the South Tahoe PUD Alpine County Contract Commission. For the last 30 years. So I work closely with them.
Mm-hmm. And they actually also monitor, especially Harvey Place Reservoir had an outbreak last, I believe it was September. And what was unique there is we had to recommend that they get down in touch with the downstream users, because there is some livestock, and it could be potentially toxic if the livestock were able to access this water.
Mr. Sandell.
I know it's early days, but are there any solutions to this or on the horizon, perhaps for limited areas? It's hard to imagine doing something to a lake, but maybe around a marina. I noticed in the EO report there was a little thing about aerating around a marina. And, of course, algicides, which hopefully bring more benefit than harm, but where are we going to go with this?
Yeah, so there's biological, physical, and chemical controls. Biological, you could do biomanipulation. Now, that could be introducing Daphnia, zooplankton, to actually eat the cyanobacteria. You could put predator fish in. However, Department of Fish and Wildlife, we would probably be up against that. I don't know that they would permit that. Floating wetlands have also shown some promise. However, you have to think about the uses of the water body. It wouldn't be conducive to a water body that supported a lot of rec and water skiing, swimming. You may not have that ability. There's also, your stream side riparian vegetation, huge in just retaining that sediment load and the particulate phosphorus. So that's very important. And then the shading for the temperature to keep the cool water cool. Then physical, there's, as far as physical, there's a lot of mixing that can be done. Skiron Marina and Tahoe Keys Property Owners Association is looking at installing a laminar flow aeration system, which is already in Skiron Marina. Skiron Marina, however, has not been plagued by cyanobacteria. So we hope to see that there's some promise with that non-chemical control measure. That sonic waves have been used. They actually break down the cell wall, but you're also probably going to be breaking down the cell wall of other organisms. And then flocculants like alum are very common. Apparently, Spring Valley Lake has used some alum in the past. So that might be an option. However, at our workshops, we did discuss that the alum, though not considered an algicide, would probably require an NPDES permit as a discharge of a waste to a surface water, as would phosloc. Is another, it's a lanthium clay that's charged. It binds to phosphorus, and molecule per molecule, it's a lot more effective than alum in binding to, I mean, wastewater treatment plants could use this as well. It binds to that phosphorus, locks it up, and it's not bioavailable for the cyanobacteria. That was developed in Australia, and I think the limitation with the phosloc is there's few distributors with it, but it is more, you're seeing it more commonly in the U.S. And colorants and dyes are very common, probably more in the Midwest, smaller ponds, but again, that may also require an NPDES permit. Basically, the colorants and the dyes are blocking out the sun. And then, of course, the chemical control. So, yeah. And then watershed, you know, as we develop populations and new subdivisions, we really have to be mindful of the hydrologic modifications that we're doing and trying to create nothing like the Tahoe Keys subdivisions with lagoons. We have to encourage more water flow because actually water flow is one of the best ways to keep cyanobacteria at bay. So, you know, just more thoughtful developing of communities. And I think a lot of places are there. But again, that's a new community. And I think reservoirs, a lot of them were developed in the 30s. So we're seeing a lot of internal nutrient cycling and buildup.
Thank you for a most thoughtful and informative presentation. Appreciate it.
Welcome.
I don't have any comment cards from anyone from the public, but I will ask if there's anyone in the public who would wish to speak to this item. Don't see anyone. Thank you very, very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I believe that concludes the Wednesday night portion of the meeting, and we will reconvene here tomorrow morning. Thank you very much for being with us, and we'll see you tomorrow.
There you go. See? Don't look at me. I'm
wrong. And I said,
I was checking to see if there was an email or something. Well, we all know.